Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. How are you, Han?
I am fabulous, Jim.
Excellent. Well, welcome to Straight Talk episode number 30. Tonight's episode, we're going to talk about you're looking at an existing building. Will it be the best and the right solution for what you're trying to accomplish? We've got a pile of expertise when it comes to dealing with projects like this. I'd say well over half, if not more, of our work has been dealing with existing buildings that are renovated and turned into a practice, a new dental practice. And it's not always a existing dental practice. It's a menagerie of other kind of buildings, things from normal stuff like retail centers to well, we've had everything up to a movie theater, didn't we, Han?
That's right. It could be used for any. It could be anything. The fun, the part about doing that kind of project is it really, really pushes your ability. It's really fun. It's challenging. But that's from the design standpoint. From a financial standpoint, that's a totally different issue. Right?
And you have to be very careful. Exactly. You really have to be very careful. You can go back and listen to some of our previous podcasts where we talk about, you know, should you take that 100-year-old farmhouse and renovate it in a dental office? Well, we did a whole podcast on that because of the issues that you run into. This one's going to be more so creating a, you know, we've got a checklist that you really need to go down through and make sure that you're comfortable with every item on the checklist before you decide, yeah, that's the building I'm going to either rent and renovate, or I'm going to buy and renovate. But we could be looking at a historic project. You could be looking at a building that used to be some kind of other funky use that you would never think of it being turned into a dental office, and you turn around and turn it into a dental office because it's in the right place. It's the right price, and it has the right kind of exposure. We had an opportunity to work on a project I think we spoke a little bit about, was for one of our clients down in Findlay, Ohio, where she took a existing urology office that was built back in the late to early 50s, mm-hmm. and turned it into a new dental office. Because of the issues and everything around it, most of the building had to be torn down, and a whole bunch of areas had to be added. And because of there were issues of variances and existing right-of-ways and all that kind of stuff, it was rather complicated, but it was very successful when it was all said and done. So let's obviously, you know, many people like to build a new building from the ground up, but it's not always possible. Your land might not be available. You might not have the budget to do both the land and the building. So you say, well, okay, let me look at maybe I can find the an existing piece of building or existing building that is what I'm looking for. And it could be a part of a building. So, you know, let's say you've got a multiple floor project in an urban environment and you're taking an area of one of the floors. And that presents a whole set of issues and questions that you have to review before you make that determination. So the most common is the retail center. Now, Han, we've dealt with that a lot. So, you know, we want to go over what what you really kind of run into when it comes to the retail center aspect when you're trying to turn that into a new dental office?
Yeah, there's a few scenarios, and certainly we won't have all the time, you know, the time to cover everything. But, you know, if there's anything that repeat what you heard before, partners for the redundancy. Mainly, you know, a retail center is a natural draw because it's already a common, you know, a common locations where everybody know. Everybody goes shopping, do whatever they do because of that shopping center. But in the retail center, some of the things that first of all, you shouldn't assume anything, okay? Going to a retail facility, you can count on changes. There is nothing that's going to be fixed. In other words, if you go next door to you is a jewelry store, that's wonderful. They're quiet. They bring, you know, the clientele go there to spend money and so on and so on. But 6 months down the road, it could be turned into, you know, a restaurant, a bar, and things like that. The dynamic of that, your environment would change. So in a retail facility, the only space that you can actually control is yours. You can control some of it or minimize some of the pitfall through a little bit of creative lease negotiation. And things of that nature. Things that we run into, other than, you know, besides things associated with parking, access, and all that stuff. One in particular that we ran into that was kind of caught us off guard is if you go into a facility where there's an existing large space and you have to subdivide it, make sure that the lease. And the discussion of who's responsible for subdividing it, who's responsible for paying for it, and when that needs to be done. Because if it's not addressed early on, it could really drag on. So that is one pitfall that we encounter that we have never ran into before. And it did, it did delay the project because the landlord basically dragged their feet. It cost the project about roughly 3 months before it can get started because of that. So that is the pitfall. Another thing is the walls between the unit. Okay, if it's existing, make sure that it is sound, insulated. Make sure that it goes up to the deck and seal. It's required to be, to have a certain fire rating. There's maybe some stipulation where if there is if it's the whole building is sprinkler. Then the wall may not need to go to the full deck, but to the deck above. But the worst scenario that could happen in that situation is that your neighbor could be a Chinese restaurant. Okay? The aroma next door could be more than you want to handle. So a demising wall to the deck above, seal and all that stuff would minimize those issues. And Jim?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Han touched on some of the most important points, but you want to look at this from our criteria. The criteria is location. Obviously, as Han said, because it's a retail center, there's a lot of traffic. Hopefully, you've got a good exposure within the center itself. The other important part of that is parking. How much do you get? How much do you have really available to you? Is it going to work with what you need to have? But mostly, is it real parking that you can have your patients park at? Because if you're sandwiched in between the two very high volume users, that means you say, well, that's perfect because I'm going to have, you know, tons of people walking by my front door or seeing my front sign. Well, that's true. You will. But if no one can find a parking space, that's a negative. So you got to be real careful about that and at least have the ability to have the necessary amount of parking for your client. Now, obviously, you can always force your staff to park behind or in a further location and walk and that kind of stuff. The other is exposure. Exposure within the center we talked a little bit about, but exposure in the sense that, you know, where can you get light? Where can you get natural light? Where are your windows? Is the corner available on that center where you have the opportunity to be able to take some, you know, side windows or put some side windows in as opposed to just having windows on the very front facade, like 90% of all retail centers? The construction quality and the actual structure itself, Han touched on, you really need to make sure that all those things are in place that need to be there, like whether there's fire rating between the demising walls, what's happening with the roof structure, is the building sprinkled, is there the necessary amount of exits, and so on, so that you can satisfy the life safety code issues and get your building permit and eventually your construction occupancy permit and open your doors. Now, Han, you also talked about utilities. So utility systems like gas, water, sewer, electrical, HVAC. There's a lot of centers out there that maybe used to be an old grocery store that, you know, you can get grocery stores into 60 or 80,000 square feet. Then they started to break those up. Well, all those systems have to be broken up. And like Han said, you've got to make sure that that's covered in the lease and who does it and when they do it so that you're protected. So, you know, the retail center is a very viable dental office conversion. So, and it could be just about anything. But go down through that, Jim, that checklist and make sure that it works, Han.
Yeah, when we say retail center, naturally there's two. There's two types, okay? One is strictly a shopping strip that has no anchor. And then there are retail centers that may have one or two large anchor, like a grocery store or a large national big box store. Ideally, you want the, you know, one that has that draw the most traffic into. A grocery store, we typically say, you know, you're going to look for an ideal location, you know, find a grocery store that's nearby because we all eat. Okay, we may not shop for, you know, shoes and coats and stuff like that all the time, but we eat all the time. So a grocery store is a natural draw. The little retail strips for boutique shops and stuff like that, yes, it is a retail strip. The rent may be a little less and stuff like that, but, you know, identify what it is, which one will give you the most exposure, the most, eyeballs looking at it, and then, check your demographic and make sure all the numbers and everything fit for your particular criteria. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. And 9 times out of 10, you're looking at leasing this space. So you're going to be leasing the space. You won't own it. So everything you put in it will eventually stay there, with the exception of equipment, which you can take out when you decide to move. So, you know, that's more than likely a lease that you renovate. Now, the next two types of buildings are a standalone building on a shared lot and a standalone building on a private lot. Now, we want to talk a little bit about those because each one of them is a little different in the sense that, okay, within a shared lot, you are actually owning a building. And that building could be a multitude of things, but you're going to own a portion of a building or a building of multiple buildings on a lot. So you might have a lot that has been developed, and it could be anything, and maybe there's 5 or 6 spaces, buildings, that are separated by each other, and each one of them have their own condominium type of ownership. So you actually buy that building, and then you buy a portion of the parking lot, and then you share the common costs, like maintaining the common area, maintaining the landscaping, all of the exteriors sometimes of the buildings also fall into the common area, and then as well as the paving and, you know, everything from snow removal to repair of asphalt, all that kind of stuff. So the standalone shared lot has some uniquenesses, because just like in a retail center, you really don't have control over who your neighbor's going to be, unless you put it in the agreement up front. So there is the possibility that two buildings down, you could have another dentist. You could have a competitor. You could have an undesirable space, whatever that might be. You know, I don't know what, you know, a tattoo parlor, you know, who knows? Some people think that's undesirable. Some people don't. But, you know, it's the bottom line is what group of people do you want to have adjacent and available to your space? Now, standalone private lot is the typical scenario where you have a piece of property that has a single building on it. That single building is what you're buying along with the property and everything around it. So that's the most controllable for you. You basically own it. You're able to do anything you want to it, and it's yours. So one day, if you decide no longer to be there and you want to move to some other location, you can sell that building and the all the improvement in it, as well as the equity maybe that was developed or created. So both the standalone building on a shared lot and the private lot give you that advantage that you're able to actually buy and then improve and then sell, be able to recoup that equity. And again, the same criteria, you know, the location, obviously, is there room for parking? Is there enough parking? If there's not, is there room that I can put more? What kind of exposure do I have in the way of windows and orientation? And what do my, you know, what do my neighbors look like? You know, is there enough square footage? Sometimes there's not enough square footage and you have to put an addition on. You know, is there a room then on that property, both on a shared lot or a private lot, that will allow you to place that addition so that you can go from, well, there's only enough room for a 3-op, but you actually wanted 8. Well, you need to have enough square footage. Evaluate it from the construction quality and structure to make sure it's the right kind of structure. Now, here's a unique one, Han, that you were talking to me about before the show, having to do on what I would call a shared lot, would be like a multi-story building in an urban environment where you're going into and maybe you're buying one of the floors. And you were discussing the floor construction. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about that one?
Yeah, it's rather unusual to even find. It's a concrete plank. Think of a, you know, a large slab that has round shaft cuts into it to reduce weight. There is reinforcement strands in there to give it strength. And, you know, it's built so that it can, you know, so it acts as a floor deck or a roof deck. It's typically, I've seen it used, or I've used it on projects in industrial application. You see that used in condo type of facility. Gyms have used it in workout facilities.
Health club.
But for a dentist office, it will be rarer. But of course, you know, if the building's in a great location, have great visibility, have you know, growing all that stuff, if you run into that type of building with a, you know, with a structural concrete slab, it's not one of those things. No, it will require a certain level of expertise in terms of contractors, okay? Besides the right criteria in terms of buildings and stuff like that, the more complex the building, the higher level of know-how the contractor need to have. So it's a little tricky. Let's see. Joe with a pickup truck and a circular saw, go out there and say, yeah, we can fix, we can build anything and start drilling holes and cutting holes into your slab would cost the building major, major structural issue. Okay? But it's a rare thing for dentist office, but it could happen if you go into like a multi-story building. Those are one of the things you got to check out, because that type of flooring system has limited ability for you to do things with. It requires a different eye, different knowledge to even lay out the space so it effectively can work with that type of flooring system. Jim?
Right, exactly. And just like, it's kind of like the opposite of a retail center. A retail center typically is a concrete floor that's been poured on the ground called slab on grade. Now, that's there. So if you want to put any plumbing or water or anything in the floor to get to the chair or suction, you're going to have to do that by cutting up the concrete floor, digging into the ground, running your pipes, backfilling, and then replacing and pouring the concrete back again. Okay, it's messy, but it's done all the time. In that scenario that we were just talking about the precast concrete planks, there's not the ability to cut into the floor slab like you would have on a slab on grade. You don't have the thickness, because typically it's a concrete plank. Usually they're 8 or 12 inches thick and then a couple inch topping. Well, that 8 or 12 inches is the structural component. So you're not cutting that. You don't cut into it. The only area that you could possibly cut into would be the little 2-inch topping that's on the 2 to 3-inch topping that's on top. And that's not enough to put plumbing in. That's not enough to put suction in. That's not enough to put gas in. So what you end up having to do is you have to punch all the way through the floor plank and the topping and then expose everything underneath, and all of a sudden, now you're in the ceiling space of the person below you. One, are they going to let you do it? And two, can you even get to that point? Some places are unaccessible, and you really can't get up there to make those kind of changes. Unlike an office space or some other kind of space where you don't need to punch through the floor, the dental offices need utilities to each one of those operatories. And that's the unique aspect of that. So you got to be real careful about, what is the construction of that floor. And that could hold true on, any kind of building, not just a concrete floor. I mean, it could be a wooden floor, but you still don't have the ability to get under there and do something. So that has to be evaluated. And I guess that's our point.
Jim, I mean, it's like, some of the office that are being discussed about could be in a residential structure. Okay. It's a house, so what do we need to do? Well, you need to do possibly a lot. You might have to reinforce the existing floor structure, because it doesn't have the proper load to carry a commercial office requirement. So, just be aware, don't fall in love with a space and then try to print money to build it. Okay, check things out and make sure that you do your due diligence, so that way you don't buy into a building where you spend more money than you and anticipate. Certain structure have certain characteristics that you have to work with and be prepared to pay for. For instance, a theater. All right, a theater. What's a big deal about a theater? Well, it has usually it has a sloped floor. Okay, a sloped floor don't work very well in a dentist's office. Okay, nowadays a sloped floor usually means handrails because it a certain pitch doesn't meet ADA, and you can't really put a chair, your dental chair, on a sloped floor. So you either build it up, that's a different issue, or you cut it out, or you fill it in. But there's money that you spend that typically doesn't associate with when you deal with, your standard slap-on gray retail strip or standalone building. Knowing what you're getting yourself into could save yourself a lot of gray hair and money.
Yeah, churches are another one. The theater or movie theater, a church is another. Obviously, assembly or worship space, most of them or a good portion of them have a sloped floor. And so sometimes not as steeply as, for example, a movie theater would be, but they may. And so that has to be really evaluated on how best to solve that. If that's the building that you're looking at, it's a viable solution. We've seen and done a lot of things with old churches that no longer are being used for worship, and they can be turned into some very interesting,
pretty cool places,
and exciting offices, dental offices. Doesn't mean you have to keep the stained glass, but you might like it. And it might be, wow, this is really quite cool. Because some of them are built like tanks. And especially the older ones have been around for years and years and years, hundreds of years. And they're great structures. And it'd be a shame to tear them down. But you just have to be aware there are uniquenesses within that you have to solve. You were saying, Hon?
Yeah, actually, down in Savannah there, Jim, there was a church that got turned into a beauty salon, which is pretty cool. They kept everything. I used to, when in college, I rented a room out of a former house for Archbishop in Indiana. And it's one of the few places that still have, the chapel with the pews. Okay, so if you come home late at night and on a Friday night and you need to pray before you go to bed, it's there. But it's kind of cool. All right? As long as you know what you're getting yourself into, those are like landmarks. Okay? They are iconic buildings. So great for marketing. But again, it requires a certain level of knowledge to deal with those. Jim had done his fair share, and I have done mine. And together we have done other projects that require a little bit of creative thinking. So those are fun. Those are very fun. But again, they're a little bit more difficult than just simply a brand new building from the ground up.
Well, let's talk about a couple, two or three building types that we've seen and how they evaluated it. We've always already talked about the urology office project down in Findlay. Well, here's another one. You got an existing bank. The bank is going out of business, or that bank chain was purchased and they shut down every other one. So you got an existing bank. Well, one would think, well, right off the top, well, banks are always in a good location, which they usually are. They usually are in the same kind of criteria where you want to have your dental office, by the grocery store, by the gas station, along the main path, adjacent to where all the people are going to be. So, it usually is a pretty good bet that's a good location. The problem is the way banks are typically put together is there's some areas that you don't want to have to deal with. and the one of which is the vault. The vault itself, whether it's a precast concrete animal or it's something that's actually been cast in place, we've seen and we've done before, and a lot of times that vault just becomes a space that you don't do anything with. It might be that it's just there. I don't expect to turn it into somebody's office because it's not going to be an operatory. You're not going to be able to punch a hole through the floor without some major costs.
You can, but that is if you want to spend all your money on that portion of the building.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing that vault could be used for is storage. And, you know, maybe the idea, well, hey, let's set this up so that when you walk into the reception and there's a reception desk and the receptionist, and behind the reception and the reception desk is the old vault door. And it's built into and integrated into your logo and your design. You know, that could be a cool possible solution to that. But again, don't expect to turn that into anything that you can use it for. The other part of building, yeah, go ahead, man.
It would be a wonderful room for screamers.
Problem is, you can't get any utilities in there. It's extremely expensive to try to do anything with an existing wall like that. I mean, it can be done. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You throw enough money at it, it can be done. The other area that's obviously nine times out of ten you're going to be dealing with is you're going to be dealing with the drive-thru. So the whole aspect of the drive-thru, the canopy that's typically there, all the suction tubes that delivered the little cylinders back and forth, all of that stuff, you know, what are you going to try to do with that? You know, are you going to enclose that space and turn it into working interior space, or are you going to demolish part of the building and take down the canopy? Are you going to just leave it there, and then it becomes like, okay, it's like this eyesore kind of thing, and how best does that work? So it is a problematic portion of a bank when it comes to the dental office. It's taking up valuable resources as well as your square footage on your lot. So, you know, either it's going to be turned into building, it's going to be torn down, and it's going to be used as parking, it's going to be landscaped. But unless you're expecting to have staff with a whole lot of picnic tables and that's their place to go have lunch, you got to do something with that drive-through canopy.
There was a few discussion on Downtown. A few of the dentists had entertained the idea of buying a bank, and I do believe a few of them have. The canopy is a piece that typically it's a telltale sign it was a bank, okay? They don't spend the money to eliminate the canopy. They become a very unusable spot on your property, and it kind of lock in the traffic pattern that are typically used for banks and not for a dentist's office. So it's one of those things. Just, you know, you look at everything and see the potential, the cost, and whether it really matters, whether it goes or it stays. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's one building type that we've run into numerous times. It's possible, interesting, but it has its own kind of uniquenesses. A bank could be on a concrete slab on grade. It could be on a basement with a floor structure. It could be on a crawl space. All of that kind of stuff is available. You just need to make sure you understand where it's at. Here's another big one, a medical office building. And this could be a standalone, single-story medical office building that's sitting in a group of other medical office buildings on several acres and you're sharing a whole bunch of parking spaces. And you know, there's building A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Each one of them are, you know, 5 to 10,000 square feet apiece. We see that a lot. And you may come in and say, okay, I'm going to take part of building B. I'm going to take half of it, and I've got a 5,000 square foot spot that's mine. Well, medical office buildings create some uniquenesses. You want to talk a little bit about that one?
Well, medical facility, it's basically just that. It's usually attracted, your medical practitioner, solo, internists and family doctors and stuff like that. Would it be a good fit for a dentist office? Sure. Depends on the floor. Depends on, the bylaw that govern the building access to the space below to install utilities and stuff like that. But you will experience basically the same thing. Access, because it's not a retail strip, so it doesn't have to be on the main street with two or three access points. Signage usually pretty awful when you deal with medical or commercial offices because your signage it may go on a pylon, it may go on the door, but it's small. It's usually small. It may go on a directory inside the building if you have common corridors and things like that. Naturally, you in that type of building is that you hope that other medical related tenant could refer you or their patient to you and things like that. So that is certainly a plus. But I think visibility is certainly something that it's a big trade-off going to a medical office building. In terms of the type of building, there's things that I think that would be a hindrance. Is usually a medical office building, if you go into a suite with a main corridor, the entrance and stuff, the entrance to the particular suite may have some flexibility in terms of its relocating it. So you have an ideal layout. Sometimes you're lucky enough that the building owner would allow you to, but most of the time it's kind of locked in place. Every time you move a door, it affects the traffic pattern. It may affect the egress and ingress and things like that. So the entrance to the suite is something that you have to try to work with. If you get into a suite, also look at a second exit out, because if you get into a situation where you're locked in, it makes it a little bit more hazardous in terms of fire escape. But then that of course, you can always work around that, but just be mindful of those situations. Jim?
Right. And then one of the big things that unfortunately the misconception is out there that, okay, that's a medical office building. They had 12 exam rooms. That means I have 12 operatories. Does that work? Don't think so, does it?
Usually not.
Usually not. Never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
plan on
actually,
tearing all the walls down.
There is ways. There is ways to use that space as the dentist's office, but it requires a non-traditional approach to it. Okay, because we also have this conversation actively on downtown, is that there is mobile units that are, that you can plug in and go. But it comes at, it's a little noisy. It require daily, if not every other day, but typically daily, dumping of the collected fluids. It's expensive. Okay, so if you're leasing the space and you only have, three or four or even five treatment rooms, it is an option. If you can't drill into the floor to to put in the utilities and stuff like that, or you're going to be there for maybe 5 years and you're going to pick up everything and go, there is options. But the typical dentist office have utilities that usually go into the floor. Okay? It's not that you can't. It's that understanding what you can that's important. Jim?
Yeah, exactly, because we're talking about, potentially a one-story building that's in a group of a whole bunch of buildings. We see them all over the country. There's tons of them, and they're nice little buildings, but the biggest thing is, Hon, you brought out, is having to do with the exposure. You're buried. 9 times out of 10, unless you get lucky and you get to be the one on the corner, as you enter the complex, you're going to be buried. You're in building G. Bill was in one of these kind of facilities a long time ago, and he was in building, I think it was G, which was behind the other building, around the corner from a building over there by this other building. You needed breadcrumbs to get to it.
They all look alike.
And
usually,
every one of them look alike. And the only difference is what's the name on the door and the letter that's there. And so you got to be real careful. Does that work?
Now, you've seen the same scenario you're talking about in the commercial office building or medical office building that are built using the model of boutique shopping strips. Okay? Things you should look at is, can you expand? Can you actually expand? If you're leasing the space in a commercial or a medical office building, you have to look at how much would it cost you in 5 years or even 10 years to relocate to a different location versus staying and have the option to actually expand into the next suite. We have done several of those expansion. Luckily, the owner of the unit was able to purchase next door neighbor who vacated. But that should be part of your business plan, whether you want to grow in place or you relocate and start over in a different location.
Now, the other medical office building structure type that you can run into would be like a multi-floor, 2 or 3 floor, common entry, maybe has an atrium that has an elevator in it and allows you to, access the floors. We've all seen them. We've all been in them, and they're like big donuts. And so, you got a hole in the middle of them. You got spaces all the way around the perimeter, and you've got a corridor that runs all the way around an elevator, and you're one of the tenants within that space. Again, signage, location, people don't know where you're at unless they read your ad. You've got one little name on a placard that maybe is on the building sign as you walk up to it. So it may only be the opportunity that you have to take because there's nothing else around. But it's not the first, or wouldn't be our first choice because of that. And then you also run into those issues we talked about before. What's the floor construction like? How can I get my utilities in? What's my neighbors like? As in, do I have the potential to expand if I'm getting 3,000 square feet now, but, maybe 5 years from now, I need to be at 5. The extra 2,000 square feet could be hard. Then you run into, okay, well, then I've got to relocate to a different floor or a different area, leaving all the what you've done there before to stay there. So it's one of those issues. We've seen that, haven't we, Hon?
We've seen it plenty of time.
Yeah. Now, the other kind of building type, which is getting more and more prevalent, is what's called the mixed use, where you have multiple types of uses. Now, when I use the word uses, I mean it in a code standpoint. From the building code, they look at the use of a building and they break it up into criteria around the life safety concerns. And it does all kinds of things. They talk about things like square footage per person so that they can establish occupancy, so that would then turn around and establish the exit widths. And they deal with fire ratings between the units, because one area maybe has a larger occupancy or a more flammable material within that occupancy, so you want to separate those different uses. So let's say you're running into a situation where you've got a business or a office kind of structure that is on the first floor. And on top of it, you've got residential apartments or condominiums. Those are a different use. They have a different set of criteria, and they fall under a different code. Typically, they have to be separated from the use by a fire-rated structure. So that floor system is going to have a fire rating in it. If it's the other way around and you've got, you know, residential floors below you and you've got commercial or business or office above, then your floor is fire rated. So your floor has to have a fire rated separation between the two uses. And that becomes a lot of times the rub, where you can't punch holes through that and run utilities. You can't punch holes through that and deal with HVAC ductwork easily. It can be done, but it's not easy. And it becomes the, what do we call that, Han? The proverbial money pit?
Yes. Yes. It just starts printing.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we were having meetings and one of the doctors said, you know, they just tell me to keep working more and I got to make more money. Well, yeah, you can only work so much and you can only work so many hours and then you run out of hours. And so, you know, it becomes an issue of what's the ideal is not to work more and more hours, is to work smarter to be able to collectively get ahead faster. And that really pertains to what we're talking about here, as to being smart about the selection of the space or the selection of the building, because it may be the coolest thing around and it's the neatest building and it's like, oh man, I got to have my office there, but it may be the absolute worst possible selection from a business standpoint because of what you're going to have to do to it to turn it into a dental office.
We see, Jim, we've seen historic homes turn into a dentist's office. Not that it can't work. It just probably require a fair amount of renovation inside to make it so that it become an effectively used dentist's office. Okay? Taking the door off of a, you know, a tiny matchbox-sized bedroom and call it a operatory, just don't cut it. Okay, it's a matter of how effective can the space be used. Play the game of labeling it one thing and use it for another. Just don't, you know, just it's not the right way to do things. That's one way to get yourself in trouble. Okay, so a historic structure are wonderful looking. It has great workmanship from a standpoint of design, architecture, and, you know, and just the beauty of it. But like say, the term money pits mean exactly that. If you, you know, if you have a love for architecture and get yourself an old building, it will require a lot of love. And that love usually translates into money.
Exactly. So, and don't get us wrong, there are a ton of other building types that are out there. I mean, you could, theoretically, it could be an old warehouse. It could be, you know, an existing health spa or, you know, a health club. I mean, there's a bunch of things. I mean, it could be an old school. I mean, you just think of it. There are tons and tons and tons of existing buildings throughout our country, and I'm sure many of them are very viable as dental offices. But just go back through and use the checklist and the criteria. You know, does it fit the location criteria? Is it in the right location? Is it within the right location within the property? Does it have the proper parking capabilities? And remember how we calculate parking. We've talked about it before. We'll talk about it again. You have 12 operatories. That's 12 cars. You have 12 people or clients in the chair. You might have 12 people in the lobby. So that's 24 cars. Now you're going to have staff. The staff at 12 operatory, you're going to have what? Close to 12, aren't you, Han?
Yep.
So we're up to 36. And then you got your support business staff. You got another, you know, maybe 5 or 6 there. So you're at 40 parking spaces minimum. And then go to the other criteria, that the human one, is if someone drives by and sees that more than 80% of the parking lot is full, they don't stop. So you effectively are deterring your first-time client if your parking lot is always full. I mean, there's this one medical office building over in Sylvania that I go to for my dermatologist, and I don't know what they were thinking. It's a gorgeous building, a great location and everything else, but they're probably 30 parking spaces underparked. And every time you go into that parking lot, you're driving around and around and around to try to wait until somebody comes out, because 90% of that parking lot is full all the time.
Is this the building on Haroon Road, Jim?
Yeah, you know it. And
I know exactly,
like,
what you're talking about.
You know it. You know it. And it creates a reputation. Now, the only reason why I go there is because my dermatologist goes there, and it's the only place I can see him. And so you deal with it. But you don't want to have to put yourself in that position. Trust me, if I could find a dermatologist that I would be comfortable with, I wouldn't go there. I would go someplace else.
I saw that building.
It's the way we are. Yeah, it's just the way we are.
Yeah, I saw that building. I saw that building built, and I thought it was going to be like a real estate or an insurance company. Because they don't require that kind of parking. Yeah.
And so, okay, so back, and then exposure. Make sure you have the right exposure and the right windows and the ability to keep or put windows where you want to have windows. Obviously, make sure it fits your square footage. If there's not enough square footage in that building today, is there room to be able to add to it or take adjacent space to get the square footage that you need to do what you're trying to accomplish? And then number five is the construction quality and the structure. Are those things there that will allow you to easily turn this into a dental office, or are you dealing with some very difficult structure or quality of construction that has to be solved or dealt with, like sloping floors in a theater or a church, or concrete floors that you have to deal with in a multi-story building, and those kind of things. And then, obviously, lastly, having to deal with your utility systems. You know, is it the gas, the water, the sewer, the electrical, the HVAC, all of those, will they work? Or do you have to spend an exorbitant amount of money to be able to retrofit and put in the systems to make it a dental office? We really evaluate those things. So we haven't actually had an opportunity, Han, in the last several episodes, because we unfortunately tried to cram so much in on a particular day. We haven't had this segment of what's been happening on Dental Town lately. Do you want to share anything hot?
It's hot. Once in a while, you know, this subject will creep up, and I thought it'd be more of a common knowledge than problem. There is one room, you know, there's probably several, but one in particular that are usually doesn't get the kind of care in its design and how things are taken care of. It's associated with acoustic and associated with heat, and that's your mechanical room. And, you know, typically the conversation is, where do you put it? Because you put it away from everyone. Tuck it in the corner of the building so nobody hear it. You know, the acoustic is easy to solve. There is no such thing as a quiet mechanical room. You're going to hear it. It depends on how loud. The door, you cannot seal that room and make it a sealed room. Okay? It doesn't need to be fire rated. The door doesn't need to be fire rated, but it should be a good quality, you know, solid wood door. Heat is something that's often neglected. The room, the equipment in your mechanical room, your vacuum and your compressor, more the compressor than the vacuum, but they both generate heat, lots of heat. If it's not ventilated well or dissipated well, it will shorten the life of your equipment. It will create all kind of issues. So as a general practice, make sure that room is well ventilated. Okay, that play higher priority than sound, in my opinion. That's it, Jim.
Yeah, it's a very valuable but underlooked at space within the dental practice itself.
Jim, in a nutshell, the vacuum and the compressor, besides the technology stuff, it is the heart of your practice. If the vacuum and compressor doesn't run, you don't work.
Right, you don't.
I'll give you
an experience that actually I dealt with just recently. Had to have some dental surgery, and they put some stitches in and went in to get the stitches taken out. And the technician was about ready to take the stitches out, and all of a sudden the mechanical system kicked in, and literally the whole room shook. Well,
wow.
You know, I'm not, you know, I'm a pretty big guy, and I'm sometimes fearless, right? But you know, it's like, you know, that scared the snot out of me, because here the technician is with a sharp instrument going to be cutting the stitches to pull them out, and it's like, hold on a second, and you know, it's like it just wasn't a comfortable experience. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about the dentist and his staff and his team. It's the building. It's the mechanical system and what does it do to your practice. If that little space is not looked at and not dealt with and managed properly, could have that same experience by a lot of people, a lot of clients, and some may say, that's it, I'm never coming back because of that. And you could be the best dentist in the world, or you could have the best staff in the world. And so, you know, you got to look at these things and you got to be careful about them. So we may, you know, some people say, it's just a mechanical room. No, it's not just a mechanical room. It affects so much of the building. And you really do have to.
It costs a lot of money for the equipment. It's made for a certain life cycle. But if you don't handle the heat issue, and that life cycle will be short, and it will give you a lot of problems. So that in a nutshell is something that the topic creeps up from time to time. You go like, don't people understand that the number one enemy to your technology is heat, too much heat. And there is easy economical way to handle it, but it's it need to be addressed, particularly if you are designing or having a space design. Your team should be conscious of that and handle it appropriately, or you have problem by design.
Definitely.
Hopefully,
it's been interesting. You've had an opportunity to learn a few things. I know Han and I enjoy doing this. If you'd like to learn more about us and about the going back to the previous podcast and learning about some of the things that we've talked about, that all can be found at our website of www.hjtdesign.com. If you've got a question, get a hold of us. You can get us on our 800 number. It's 866-213-1268. Send us an email. We answer them. We will get back to you one way or another, and we'd be glad to be able to see what we can do to help you out. It's been fun, enjoyable, and Han, I'll let you have the last words.
And thank you for spending the hour with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.